Artist Salvador Dalí's debut in America, we're told, could hardly have been more fortuitous. But by 1939, Dalí began to represent a challenge to the notion of high art as he actively combined art and commerce at a moment when the burgeoning American art world began to insist that a division be made between them. It was not that art and commerce could not coexist. The Museum of Modern Art had also shown industrial objects as early as 1934 in the exhibition Machine Art, and regularly displayed objects in its galleries that were for sale, often quite blatantly and for very affordable prices, as in the Useful Household Objects Under $5 exhibition. However, MoMA's show emphasized modernist tenets, foregrounding the formal qualities of everyday objects in order to direct consumers toward objects of formal clarity and function. They actually evaluated these appliances. A most telling example was the toaster of 1940, which they described to be streamlined, as if it were intended to hurtle through the air at 200 miles an hour, an unhappy use for a breakfast utensil, and ornamented with trivial loops, bandings, and flutings. The Museum of Modern Art much preferred the toaster of 1934, whose, quote, forthright, clean, and simple design was showcased in the museum's Machine Art exhibition of 1934. That from a vernacular vanguard, surrealism, and the making of American art history by Sandra Zalman. And yes, who says art and commerce can't coexist? Art and appliances, art and toasters, for heaven's sakes. Toast is a theater piece that proves the point, and it is conceived by author, playwright, and director David Parmalee. The piece will be presented by Gaslight Theater Company this weekend at the Scranton Fringe Festival and the following weekend as part of Gaslight's own season at its new home in the East End Center in Wilkes-Barre. David Parmalee, author and director, Dane Bauer, actor and member of Gaslight's board, Katie Mihaloff and Molly Dooley, actors, all stopped in to fill us in. David Parmalee began with his inspiration for the play.
I absolutely love found poetry, and I remember being intrigued when I first read about the Dadaists and the Surrealists and little games they would play with words with things they happened to have found. And this really is the story of this. It's made entirely of things that I found, and I like to say I didn't write a word of it, because I didn't. I did not add a word. All I did was cut, for brevity, the things that I found. And it's entirely online reviews that people have written of purchases they've made through online companies. It took me about 6 months to assemble these. I must have read over 1,000 reviews. And of course, the gold, especially the comedy gold, was in the really good ones, of people who loved the thing they had bought, or the really bad ones, the people who hated it and wanted the world to know and went on and on and on and on. But you don't know who the person is. In some cases, there's context where the writer will say, I bought this for my husband. Okay, so we know there's the relationship there. But in most cases, there wasn't. So you don't know if they're men or women, young or old, where are they from? It could be anywhere in the United States or possibly the world. In fact, one says it's an Australian version, so we knew that person was Australian. So the wonderful part for me as a writer, not having written a word of it, was to recognize who was speaking, who was the character, what were they trying to say about life, about their relationships, about their view of the world, what were they angry about, what were they happy about, what bugged them every day, and take that little review, some of them 3 lines, and some of them half a page, give it life, make it into a character, and make it fun so we could see into the window of that person's soul. And with a cast like this, oh my gosh, I mean, that process, it's still going on. It's just been wonderful.
We're limited in the number of products or the kinds of products.
Yes, well, I started with toasters because we're buying a toaster. Our toaster had failed. We're ordering a toaster. And I'm looking online at toasters and reading reviews of them. And I started to hear these voices. I said, these reviews are not simply reviews. And I read one out loud to my daughter, Andrea, and she said, Dad, that sounds more like a monologue. And I said, aha. And that was the first one. And I think I remember which one it was. Well, I started to stumble across them. And it started out as being just toasters. And then I thought, what if we looked in other products and we went to similar products? We went to coffee makers and juicers. And then I thought, we need some low humor, so we started to go to some other places too. So we have about 6 different products that we review. But the bulk of them, probably, what, 3/4 of the play are toasters.
You're all theater veterans, and you're used to being Ophelia and people from contemporary plays. But here you are, anonymous reviewers of toasters and various things. What makes this compelling as a theater piece for each of you?
Well, from an acting perspective, it's kind of a challenge in that I have 10 monologues, so I have 10 different characters. And the choices you make to differentiate them from each other. So I had 10 different female voices in my head, talking 10 different ways, wearing 10 different sets of clothes, and to make each one distinct and true to the monologue and yet different from the others, I think was probably a challenge for me.
I have to agree with Molly. That was really one of the things that drew me to it. Although, to put a plug in for the Fringe Festival, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to be involved in the project as well. Because I knew this was going up at the Fringe Festival. It's the second year they've had it in Scranton. It's an international phenomenon, and I wanted to be a part of that. And I knew that this fit perfectly into the Fringe vision, and I knew that if David was behind the helm, it was going to be a lot of fun.
Why is this so right for the Fringe Festival?
Well, I think it's in the title. The Fringe is on the fringe, and it's a collection of a variety of different types of theater, from puppetry and dance to more traditional theater to unusual monologues reviewing toasters.
Yeah, fringe festivals were a place for experimental theater, untried theater, unpublished plays. So I think this script of David's fits perfectly.
Dane, how about you?
Well, for me, part of it was that I've just been trying to make more of an effort to do non-musical theater, because I've been doing lots of musicals over the years, and it's nice once or twice a year to break out and do something that's more of a play, but in this case, very untraditionally structured. A thing that appealed to me that I thought was very cool is when you're doing shows, every character in a show, like if you do Hamlet, you may have Hamlet and Ophelia, all these different characters, but they're all reflections of Shakespeare because he wrote all of them. If you do David Mamet, every character is some subsidiary of David Mamet's subconscious. Like he created all of these. But every one of these monologues is a different writer, a different person, a different background, a different level of education, a different life experience. So you have to treat each one for what it is, which is a completely new entity from the other one. Whereas, you know, with a traditional play, like I said, you're getting maybe different shades of the same creator. And this is much more varied.
It's funny. I put a photo online last night of a few of the actors. I last worked with Dane on The Crucible. Here we are, Hanging Witches. Worked with Katie on Hamlet. We have 11 people dead at the end of the play. At the same time we were doing Hamlet, Molly was playing Ophelia in Hamlet. I thought, we've done some pretty serious stuff together. And here we are doing this nonsense, you know, which has turned out to be wonderful. We don't really know quite what genre it is. There's sort of sketch comedy, except nobody interacts. They're one at a time. It's kind of like a scene study you do in an acting class where we have people presenting monologues one after the other, except in rotation. And it's kind of stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. If you think of a stand-up comedian, a modern stand-up comedian, the arc of a joke might last 30 seconds or a minute. And a lot of these monologues are 30 seconds or a minute. So how do we present that, build the character immediately so they know who the character is, make the joke, and get the heck off stage? So it's a mishmash of several kinds of art forms, and I think that's another reason it's great for Fringe.
It's almost like an interesting take on the idea of an elevator play. Like an elevator play is you have one setting, you're stuck in that setting, everything revolves around that setting. Well, in this case, it's sort of the same deal, except it's just a prop. Everything revolves around a toaster or a juicer or a rat trap. So it's kind of a fun variation on that idea.
And we'll see toasters and rat traps?
Yes, that's the great thing about our set. Our set is 2 kitchen tables, and we're all gathered around the table, theoretically writing our reviews. And we come up in 2s and 3s to talk about the thing on display. And we have a very lovely classical Greek column with glass on it. And our stage manager, who handles all the props and costumes and chairs, will place the item there so that the audience knows what's being talked about. And that's the focus of attention. And every character was given 1 prop and 1 costume piece, if they wished, to define their characters. Let's try and do it with just 1 thing. and the stuff they came up with, oh my heavens, it's just wonderful. These are very, very creative people.
Is there a way you can talk to us about one of your monologues without spoiling things?
We have a couple that are obviously spouses. And, you know, I bought this toaster for my husband, or I got this coffee maker because my wife liked it. And you see that dynamic in there through their choice of language or the sentiments they use, how they refer to them. Is it a significant other? Is it a husband? Is it a wife? Hubby? You know, you sort of learn a little bit about their lives simply from their word use. And that kind of helped guide us a little bit. You know, are they happy? Are they angry? Are they venting to the internet because they really can't stand the person they live with? But they're gonna divert that anger into a toaster instead.
One of my last monologues that I do is a guy that I laughed when I read it because I've met this person 100 times and now I'm playing this person. And it's a guy who just has to be right. He found a defect in the toaster, so we pointed it out to the company that makes it. And they're kind of saying, well, it's not really a defect. It's meant to be this way, but that's not enough for him. He has to keep pushing back until he can prove, make them listen, that he is the one who is right in this. And I've met that guy 100 times. I've argued with that guy a few times. And now you're reading his words and kind of getting in his mind and feeling his frustration. But at the same time, it's hilarious because this is one where I interact actually with Molly, and I've been the Molly character in my life, and now I'm being this other guy, and it's just funny to get both ends of it and kind of step into the mind of somebody who just has to solve the problem. And that's just fun to kind of step in and do something like that.
Yeah, a lot of the characters that we portrayed as men were people who were telling the toaster company what they had done wrong or telling us how they could improve it. You know, the guy who has to fix everything. And there's a number of examples of those kind of guys.
My monologues range through, I think, the female spectrum. I have some that are the sweet, dutiful housewife who is so focused on making pre-made waffles for the kids and everything is lovely, to a woman who is so annoyed with the toaster, but I think the toaster in this case really is her husband. And she's ranting and raving about the toaster, and the toaster never does anything right. And you just know she doesn't mean the toaster. She means her significant other, her husband, who just never gets anything right at all. I have a woman who is very much a techie geek, loves gadgets. I have a woman who is a little bit out there. You're not sure all her neurons are firing. And for me, it's fun to be able to play so many different characters in quick succession.
Would you give us a sample?
This coffee maker was supposed to be a nice gift for my boyfriend. Unfortunately, all it's made me is mad. The machine worked fine for about 2 months, and then it started to drip, 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 and then leak. Good luck fixing it yourself. I'm chucking it out the window. If anyone wants a broken coffee pot, it's in my parking lot.
Why would the reviewer type the word drip 3 times? It's amazing what you find people have taken the time to do. But there it is, the mounting anger at her boyfriend. Drip, drip, drip. Hidden behind the review of the toaster.
My husband is very, very picky about his toast. I can honestly say we went through more than 10 toasters of various prices. Half of them made unacceptable toast, and half of them broke while making unacceptable toast. And then we found the Doolit. In a true panic, I thought I would just go out and buy the most expensive toaster there was. Sticker shock. But I have recommended it since, to everyone. Everyone who toasts. And it has made perfect toast since the day we bought it. I have zero regrets. And hundreds of absolutely perfect toasting experiences. Doolit is the best toaster in the world. And me? I am the toaster queen.
Whenever I hear that one with Molly doing it, you hear the tension, the anxiety. Unacceptable toast. Unacceptable to whom? Her husband. You hear the tension about pleasing her husband. And she uses the word perfect about 5 or 6 times. Oh, it's perfect now. It's perfect. I have zero regrets. This great burden on her to make this perfect toast, and she's expressing that. It's exactly how the reviewer wrote it.
We've only used it a few times and started on the number 3 setting, which burned the edges of the toast severely, and even at the number 2 setting, the edges are crispy. We're on our way down to the number 1 setting, which is as low as you can go. I think you could melt lead at number 5. Makes me wonder if it's defective.
And we're melting lead.
Mm-hmm. I think he's just... That's a man who's given up. He doesn't know what to do. You know, the kind of guy who wants to fix... The car isn't running, and he wants to get it running, but he doesn't know anything about fixing cars. That's that guy to me. Is he just... He wants it to work, but he doesn't know how.
And he wonders if it's defective. He wonders. To me, it seems pretty obviously defective. There's no wonder.
Yeah, yeah, I guess it's okay, because it makes toast. We have a series of four called Tinfoil Hat. They all have nicknames. And I found themes. We have a series of three where they all say, if they can put a man on the moon, why can't they make a decent toaster? But the Tinfoil Hat people, they're hearing the electricity singing through the coils, and it's interfering with their radio. One of them complains that lately the toaster has begun toasting spontaneously on its own throughout the day. And he's worried that if he leaves something near the toaster, it might catch on fire. And in the end, he says, I've unplugged it and plugged it back in, but I still have issues. Well, he may. And they're still using the toaster, even though they're getting these rather bizarre side effects from it. And they go, well, it does toast, but we have to unplug it every time, which is inconvenient because of the singing that's happening through the electrical cord. So it's Dane's guy taken to an extreme.
So does it move boom, 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 boom?
Oh, it has to. It absolutely does. Again, there's some that are three lines, characters up, characters down. And there's some that are almost literally a whole page. And you see the arc of that person talking about how they feel about the toaster and why. And you realize there's an awful lot going on in their head.
And this is a phenomenon, then, of the internet age.
Yeah, there's something about the anonymity of the internet, and we talked about this. One of Dane's characters at the end, he tells us, he reveals a secret about somebody that he actually gave a gift of this toaster. And he says, I was sworn to secrecy about that, but I guess it's okay to say it here. Here being in front of the whole world, but we don't know who he is. So there's that ability online, that famous cartoon where the dog is typing on the internet from the New Yorker. And the other dog is saying, it's great. On the internet, no one knows you're a dog. We don't know who these people are. They're anonymous. And yet, they told us. They managed to reveal it. And that's our tagline. They wanted to tell us about their appliances. Instead, they told us everything.
Did you read reviews before you knew about this play online to help you make decisions of your own? And has this sent you to reading reviews or reading them differently or seeking them out?
There's been a few times online where somebody will post a product. Facebook is great for this. Somebody will say, they posted one of gummy bears and said, read the comments underneath. They're so funny. And I read those. And a lot of times it's what Dave was talking about, people trying to be funny, which is funny. But for the sake of what we're trying to accomplish, I understand the reasoning behind David wanting to avoid that kind of thing. But there's certainly a lot of entertainment to be found in reading reviews. I can't say with any honesty that I've specifically gone back to read reviews since I've been doing this, because I've just been trying to memorize these ones. But I'm sure going forward, reading reviews will definitely be done in a different light.
I've been tempted to go and find these amazing toasters that everyone's raving about, because I need a toaster. And David's being very coy about which ones are good and which ones are bad. So I almost feel like I need to go to some websites and read some reviews and find this one review and then buy that toaster.
Well, I love our toaster. It was not cheap, but it's not one of these high-end incredible toasters. And it's great, but I found the review of that toaster without knowing, because all the flaws that person points out are exactly the things I don't like about the toaster. And I said to my wife the other night, this is ours. This has to be ours. One of the best resources was for a British company, and Molly represents them a couple of times, who makes this handmade toaster still made in England, and it's made the old-fashioned way. I think the technology comes from the 40s. It has a timer that ticks, and you have to lift it up yourself. And I think Williams-Sonoma sells them starting at about $300, and they go up from there. And Queen Elizabeth has this toaster. But when people get them, their reaction to the toaster is very different from what they expect. And I'm sure it's very much like buying a Jaguar in the 1970s. you always wanted a Jaguar, and now you've got it. Everyone says, wow, you got a Jag. And that Tuesday morning, it doesn't start. So there's that horrible betrayal of having spent a lot of time and energy to research the thing, especially now, because you're online, and spending a lot of money on it, and it's a lousy thing. What's your line, Katie? It's expensive.
And it makes lousy toast.
Both at once.
Are you weaving in people who are not part of the core group?
We are. We have our celebrity guest monologuist program. We have three confirmed, and we've invited several more. We might also, if we see people in the audience that we think deserve it, we might call them up at some point in the evening and ask them to do one. So we're going to bring a little bit of that Fringe experience back to Gaslight when we do this too.
How long does this run?
Well, the Fringe version is it's going to run 60 minutes. And then we didn't cut anything for the full Gaslight version. So I don't know if we have a final time on it yet. Do we?
It's like Woodstock. Who knows? It doesn't matter.
The show ends when it ends.
No, it's an hour and a half to 2 hours. Traditional theater length. It's a full evening. We have an intermission. And we might make toast. Who knows?
It is a BYOB event. You do have to bring your own butter. But we will provide the bread.
Tell us the particulars how we can see it.
We are going to be at the Scranton Fringe Festival from October 1st and October 2nd. On October 1st, that Saturday, we have a 1 p.m. and a 9 p.m. show. October 2nd, we have a 6 p.m. show. We're going to be performing at the Leonard Theater, which is at 335 Adams Avenue. Popular landmarks it's near would probably be the Bog, would be the most popular one. It's just a couple doors down from the Bog on Adams Avenue. Then the following weekend, on October 6th and 7th at 8 p.m. and October 8th at 2 p.m., we're going to be at Gaslight, which is in their new permanent location, 200 Hines Drive in Wilkes-Barre. It's in the Joe Amato East End Center, so if you're familiar with the area, it's down where Gabe's is and Red Lobster. It's in there, which is the full performance. The one at Fringe is only going to be an hour. Like we said, the other one will end when it ends. Tickets for that are available at ticketfly.com. I actually went on there today. It's really easy. Just go to ticketfly.com and type in Gaslight, and it brings up all the things, and you just purchase tickets for whatever day you need. Seating at the theater at Gaslight is general admission, but it is limited, so we're kind of pushing for people to get the advanced purchase on the tickets. It's recommended just to make sure you have your ticket for that night. And that's where we'll be for the next couple of weeks. And if you need more information, you can go to Gaslight's website, which is www.gaslight-theater.org.
And you're all making jokes about you won't get burned, that sort of things, right?
Michael said this to me today. Our son is in the show, and he said, Dad, if you're going to quote a line every time we make toast, I'm not going to be able to last another 2 weeks, because we kind of do now. How can you not? Mine is leverless. The toast descends, and there are all sorts of analogies.
I think you might be using a paper shredder.
You hit the button, the cobalt blue lights light up. Does this sound familiar? There's a countdown timer with little bars, and it descends slowly into the toaster and then rises up like a Sith Lord emerging from the abyss. To quote one of our characters.
You talked about all the comic moments, but what do we come away with?
It's surprising how evocative toast and toasters are. Those were the best reviews, and I think it's because the kitchen is where all the family things happen. And Gaslight has found this out over the years with the Playroom series. Certain rooms in the home evoke certain memories, situations, family relationships. And people talk about having the same toaster for 40 years. The one woman comes and says, I raised 6 children with the same toaster. And then I had to replace it, and I felt awful. Well, every morning you come out, make toast. Everyone's there. People going to work, going to school. The toaster is sort of your little companion through the year. So we realized there might be a lot more to a seemingly mundane appliance or experience of making toast than you think. And everybody reacts to lightness and darkness and how they like their toast. It's one of those things people are fussy about, like their coffee. It's very personal. So we learned a lot.
David Parmalee, author, playwright, and director, Dane Bauer, actor and member of Gaslight Theater's board, Katie Mihalov and Molly Dooley, actors, speaking with us about an original theater piece, Toast, conceived by David Parmalee. Toast will be presented by Gaslight Theater Company this weekend at the Scranton Fringe Festival, Saturday, October 1st at 1 in the afternoon and 9 at night, and then again Sunday, October 2nd at 6 p.m. at the Leonard Theater, 335 Adams Avenue in Scranton. That's Saturday at 1 and 9 p.m., Sunday, October 2nd at 6 in the evening at the Leonard Theater, 335 Adams Avenue in Scranton, part of the Scranton Fringe Festival. And then the following weekend as part of Gaslight's own season at its new home in the East End Center in Wilkes-Barre. And that's October 6th, 7th, and 8th at 8 p.m. and October 9th at 2. Gaslight Theater Company, 200 Hines Drive in Wilkes-Barre. Toast! For more information on the web, gaslight-theater.org, and theater ends in R-E, gaslight-theater.org.